Tonight, prophecies and predictions with John Hoag, including his work, Predictions for 2010. And we'll have all that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. John Hoag writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, and prophecy. He is considered a world authority on Nostradamus and a best-selling author as well. His work has brought him international acclaim. He's been published in 18 languages and now has appeared on more than 700 radio and television shows all over the planet. And just last week, he was with us. And John, when I said we'd get you back soon, I wasn't kidding, was I?
No, you weren't. But I had a feeling it would be that soon because so much is going on right now.
God, too much, John, too much. Do you have the feeling like there's just, we just can't take much more?
Well, actually, you know, we've often talked over the years on Coast to Coast, certainly with Whitley Strieber and Art Bell, kind of coining the phrase, the quickening.
Yes.
That a lot of people are kind of putting their hope in that, oh, well, when 2012 comes by, maybe the quickening will have ended. No, it's not going to end. But we're certainly going to enter a period, a plateauing sometime in the 2030s, but I would think we're accelerating on and on for more evolutionary and revolutionary transformation. And one of the things that's really making that happen right now, especially right now, is this opposition in astrology that has defined the Obama administration, because it was there when it was conceived in his election. And later it appeared again during his inauguration day. And it is now playing very strongly again. And as I say, in layman's terms, it's Uranus, which is in astrology the force of change or chaos, in a tug of war or opposed to Saturn, which is the limitator or the reality checker or the status quo, that which wants to hold on to the past. So these two have been in tug of war. But now they are leaving this rather mutable signs. In layman's terms, that means is that they've been in Virgo and Pisces, which is very change we can believe in, lots of dreams, lots of wonderful stuff, but also criticism on the other side with Saturn and Virgo saying, be more discerning. You know, what do you mean by change? What get down to do rather than talk? Well, now that's shifted. The opposition has now moved into what we call in astrology cardinal signs, leadership signs. So that's why you feel this urgency coming up of it's really time now to stop talking and do something. That you can just feel the people of, in America, and primarily concerning the Gulf oil situation. The other thing that's important to understand with this is Uranus, when it's in opposition to powerful planets like Saturn or the Sun or New Moon or these things, tends to be engaging in eruptions, sudden eruptions. Mm-hmm. Saturn was in near exact opposition to Uranus in the day on the 121st anniversary of Hitler's birthday, which ironically was the day that the deep water horizon blew up.
It was bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah. I've had a lot of people ask me if there's some significance to that. And I say, well, you know, in my book, Predictions for 2010, I said the most important thing that's going to happen in this year and the following year is that Mother Nature has basically had enough of our disimbalancing behavior, a disharmonious behavior with if this were Avatar, it would be all the animals coming out of the woodworks, and Awa has heard you.
You know,
it's sort of like, this is sort of like nature is trying to tell us something, and we're not listening, so nature is going to have to hit us hard. And nature tends to, that's going to be the predominant thing that's happening in 2010. And when I signed off the predictions for 2010, I put it, that was in November 1st, All Souls Day of last year. And since that time, I made a statement that as soon as January began, you would just see a spike of extreme weather. We had all the extreme blizzards. And I also talked about how when people thought global warming was dead and buried, within a few short weeks in spring, you would shift suddenly into extreme heat waves early, record-breaking. That happened in April across the eastern half of the United States. And now there are certain heat waves that are going ongoing that have made a lot of people almost forget the amazing winter that we had. And at the same time that this is happening, there will be a great temperature spike. Almost, I call it the temperature tsunami, where science will record this objectively, what I'm saying now. It'll record it next year because they take, fortunately, the time to really double-check intuitions and
sure.
theories. But they will look back at 2010 and 2011 and say there was this spike, this acceleration in our temperatures. And despite those who are denying climate change or global warming, the aggregate temperatures of land and sea temperatures have been the hottest on record since January through April, on record at any time. So we are accelerating in this year, despite the freaky cold weather that some regions have had. Which I've been saying on your show all the way back when Art was doing the show too, back in the early 90s, that one of the presages or the preambles of a change of climate is going to be a unseasonably cold, sudden blizzards, because the atmosphere has more water in it, because the general atmosphere is warmer. It has more moisture in it, and therefore when cold snaps come from the Arctic, they tend to pile snow and bury Washington.
Just dump it on us, yeah.
Yeah, since the biggest snow record recorded in Washington, D.C., since it existed back in the 1790s. And people are going, well, where is global warming, Mr. Hogue? And I said, right in front of your nose, in six-foot drifts, you know. And so, you know, nature saying, wake up. And thing that goes on with one of the ways that's so important with what's happening with astrology is that we are having a very significant, what's called a grand square, a T-square that's taking place this summer. And what that means is you have these two tug-of-warring planets, Saturn in Libra, now Uranus in Aries. And Aries rules, Uranus is change or chaos, and Aries is new enterprise or hasty, mm-hmm. intemperate war. Those are the two possibilities. Saturn in Libra is finding a balance or dealing with imbalance. Now, a cardinal sign above them both is Pluto in Capricorn, which is a defining generational era, historical era ruler. Capricorn is the way you defined your eras, your generations. For instance, if you were born in 39 through 57, you're called one of the atomic bomb babies.
That's me.
That's me too, in 55. So that's when Pluto was in Leo, when Leo, ruled by the sun, the magic power of this collective demiurge of humanity created the sun on the earth with atomic and hydrogen bombs. Now, notice when it shifted after that into Virgo. Virgo rules harvesting and judgment and the body and health, mental as well as physical, and also using the body to expand consciousness. That's why you had the revolution of LSD and taking drugs, which for many people gave them an artificial high of enlightenment. But for many people, it was the glimpse, the soma, that allowed them to actually work on themselves and advance Eastern thought in the Western world in a significant level. There again, that's Pluto, the underpinning lord of the underworld or underneath all our collective desires, motivating an entire generation into a certain mood or atmosphere. That's why history has its big atmospheres the way life was back in the 1920s is colored by the way Pluto was interacting with the major signs. That's what an astrologer would tell you.
You know, John, they will say that the old days were peaceful. They seemed, you know, so much more calm. Do you believe that compared to now?
I think that it is usually the habit of all of us in our stages of life to probably selectively forget the past and think of it as better, simpler. And indeed, in most cases, in modern times, there's some truth to that. I have lived long enough now, over a half century, to remember a simpler time, even and start, maybe I'm becoming an old fogey here, but to start remembering when I grew up in L.A., when the skies were clear, and you know, I can look at some of the movies that were filmed all around where I lived, Palos Verdes and other places they used to film on Point Fermin, all kinds of classic films were filmed there, from Ghost and Mrs. Muir to Hot Shots Part Deux. But you look at those older movies, and you can see that the atmosphere was clearer. You know, you look at the classic films around the world, and there wasn't this haze that's over our skies anywhere you go in the world, because there was less pollution. And you can watch Robin Hood and the Aeroflin prancing around in the groves around the Santa Monica Mountains and know that today that's all condos. Millions of people are living in those places that were pretending to be Sherwood Forest. Because that's the other thing you start seeing is I've gone to India since 1980, and I have seen firsthand the population explosion of Asia. And it is definitely becoming a more complicated world, and it's reaching a certain critical mass, a singularity, that a lot of people like to pin on 2012 until 2012, I predict, passes, and then they have nothing else to pin it on but the present.
Unless they come up with something else.
Well, you know, I'm sure they're thinking about it, so I'm going to jump ahead and give them one. Everybody can wait for 2060, because that is when some Kabbalists believe the Messiah will come.
I'll be 110. I'm not sure I'll be around for that one, Joe.
And it's just not as dramatic. I don't think Emmerich can do a film on Isaac Newton's calculations about the end of the world in 2060. I don't think even the Da Vinci Code fella can make that too exciting.
No, that's true. You know, but we all have, and I have fielded these calls over the last 2 years, a feeling, a collective conscious feeling that something is happening. There's an uneasiness. Now, I don't know if it's this oil spill or if it's an impending war. I don't know, but I do know that everybody feels something's happening. Do you get that?
Yeah, this is the, it is a unique feeling. And as one who has had strange kind of collective feelings over his life, when I was seven, I remember my background to this, to answer your question. When I was seven, I remember having this huge premonition that my mom and dad would die in an airplane accident when they were going to see Jack Kennedy, the president, do something with Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra in Las Vegas. And it was an overwhelming feeling of dread. And then they went to Las Vegas. Kennedy wasn't there because he was dealing with the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I felt a feeling of the collective premonition of something major about to hit the world and people. I was too young to give it verbiage like I am now. The only other time I felt that powerful, overwhelming premonition of something big for humanity and the world was on September 10th, 2001, the day before September 11th. This that I'm feeling now is something more gradual, and it almost feels like the world, that's why I went out on a limb to actually say in predictions for 2010, that Mother Nature is talking to the collective human race right now. And there's basically something going on where our survival, our existence in the future is in doubt. So this this thing is going to continue to accelerate, and hopefully, as more things fall apart, as Pluto's transit through Capricorn exposes the systemic failure inherent in a lot of our traditions, religious, economic, spiritual, social, that might have worked for us in the past, but don't work for us in this new and challenging Aquarian age that is advancing upon us. It's this imperative that you either evolve, regenerate, or die. And ultimately, what is also happening is the human race has reached this point where collective instinctive evolution can no longer sustain it. Now human beings have to awaken to their potential to consciousness and love, and that can only happen on the individual level. But if enough individuals see that point, if all a few million of you listening right now get it that only your transformation is more important than anything else, because, you know, Jesus went into the wilderness and was transformed. Buddha spent 6 years trying to discover himself. He was transformed. And look at what those two people did to influence human consciousness in the world. So your individual transformation is actually more important than the collective, because actually transformation of this kind can only be individual. But if enough of you individuals see that, then the world is elevated, as some prophets have foreseen, to another level of growth. And we'll avoid a lot of these crises.
This feeling, this horrible feeling that people have, what is precipitating that, though?
Well, it is in astrology, I would say it's this grand T square. I would also say it's Uranus moving in Aries, which happened at the end of May. And that's going to give us a taste for the next few months of what will define, in astrological terms, the shape and nature of the coming decade. You know, every decade seems to have a theme.
Sure.
And Uranus is revolution and upheaval in Aries, which means start a new enterprise, new thinking, new beginnings. But there's also forces that, with Capricorn in Pluto in Capricorn, that is, where, you know, last time we were in this cycle, we created modern democracy. 248 years ago, when Pluto was in Capricorn, that's when the Declaration of Independence was signed and the beginning of the American Revolution. It was also during the period of the Age of Reason and the Age of Enlightenment, where a lot of dogmas and ideas were dropped, the time of Rousseau and Voltaire, the time when people started seeing that human happiness was actually a right of human beings, which hadn't even been thought of much before that. Now we're back full cycle in the Plutonian cycle to a period where modern democracy as we know it has gotten to be an old model that needs systemic repair and transformation, or it could end up going into a period of fascist emergency. So one hopes now that what we need is a new Age of Reason, a new declaration of what independence is, a new America, and a new sense of what global democracy should be.
John, when we come back, I want to get into predictions for 2010. We've got six more months to go of your work. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, for just pennies a day, you can sign up for Streamlink. It's a wonderful part of being on Coast to Coast. All you have to do is go to coasttocoastam.com and sign up for Streamlink that way. It's very safe and secure. John, in your work predictions for 2010, you talk about economic crisis. We, of course, have those. Oil, you say, will be above $100 a barrel in the autumn. Why? Is it because of this spill or something else?
I signed that off around 27th October of last year, that prediction about the triple digits. In it, I talked about an average oil price that would be around $74 a barrel for most of the year. So far in the first half of the year, that's pretty much holding to that number in average. When I made that prediction, I used my what I call my oracle to do these predictions. I don't always see the bridge to the outcome. I see here's the outcome, so I report it. Oftentimes, I personally am against the outcomes and messages that are given, but still I record them. I couldn't honestly see how oil would be the cause of this economic crisis, which, you know, on your show we've been talking since early 2008, and before that in 2007, about this recession coming. And I said back then when it did come that we'd have a two-year period roughly where we're on probation, and if the governments don't really reform their banks and reform the systemic problems and failures that are inherent in the system, will go broke again and will break down. But at that time, it was only till last autumn that I got this indication that the source was not going to be from the usual ways we think it's going to come, from subprime loans, from an inflated market, from a jobless recovery, which I also predicted for the book, but from oil. So I was thinking, well, why are we going to go up to triple digits? Now, in some of my blogs, which I post every 4 days at hogueprophecy.com, right now I have a very detailed blog looking at all the stuff we just talked about the astrology of the heebie-jeebies, behind the heebie-jeebies that we're getting in this summer coming. That's posted there for anybody who wants to read it. The thing is that we are basically running into an oil crisis that seems finally to show the bridge to that weird prediction in my mind.
In a strange way, you're right.
In a strange way, it's kind of, we've got this oil rig problem. We have BP pledging $20 billion. Certainly there's going to be at some point a period where they're going to have to say enough and go into Chapter 11. The ramifications, the seismic economic earthquakes that are going to come from the oil industry being impacted by this spill, which back several months ago when it started, I said was going to perhaps be the greatest spill in history. And back then I was saying that the real barrel number was probably more like 70,000 barrels a day. Unfortunately, I was just at this moment off by 10,000 barrels. And again, this thing that's making people feel weird in some collective unconscious way is that we're looking at a world that doesn't seem to be able to function, a world of humanity, in getting things done. I mean, Americans have sort of become Americans. And, you know, the fact that we can't summon our forces to wage war on this spill, you feel the frustration in the country that the banking system that kind of got us into this mess is still virtually unreformed. That healthcare, which took up so much of the president's time and political capital last year, as I predicted, would get passed in the early part of this year, and it did happen. But still, I said in the book that it's this Frankenstein political monster made of pieces of deals and wheeling and dealing stitched together that will actually make it a system that will need reform for another 20 years. So again, I come back to this line again and again, this word, systemic failure, because these things are going to get worse, like an infection that has to come to the surface and irritate us until it is released. And then the poison can be exposed to the air. And this is, we're seeing in our economic lives, and it's as well as our social lives, our spiritual lives. And that the whole world, that's the first stage of a world that's beginning a century-long passage through evolutionary crisis and transformation. And so, you know, I look at the oil situation continuing to get worse down there, And the only good thing I can say about it is that as it goes on and on and on, we're going to see more and more clearly what isn't working. And hopefully then, President, Congress, and American people will start to have a real debate about how we redefine and redraw the drawing board of things. The same thing is happening in Europe. We've been so fixated here in America about the oil spill, but there is a huge, equally potentially vast disaster on an economic front that is about to overtake Europe because of what was triggered by the collapse of the Greek economy. The euro losing its value is showed the structural flaws in the European Union system. And so Europeans are looking at that and scratching their heads as much as Americans are scratching their heads and wondering, why can't we seem to get things done? Here we have what, to show the ironic significance again of Hitler's birthday being the day that this thing blew up in the Gulf, the rig, somebody asked me, is there some significance to it? And I think in an ironic sense, it's almost our economic pearl, ecological Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor, and it's going to have perhaps as much a significance in our future, this oil disaster. But unlike the American people of the past, it's almost like we're sitting here with Pearl Harbor just happening, and now we're just going to have a six-month commission on what to do about it. There's this kind of lackadaisical quality that can't be budged. And the only thing usually in history in the past, as well as history in the future, does when you have this budgeless, immovable force of lethargy and malaise, is deeper and deeper shocks have to come and shake us up some more. So we're going to get shaken up a lot more before we start finally getting our historic collective adrenaline back and start behaving like Americans.
You talk about hurricanes. The National Hurricane Predicting Center basically thinks that we're going to have many this year. You think we're going to have one big one?
Yes, I had a sense that the hurricane season is going to go against the predictions of the NOAA or NOAA people. It was going to be more like the season of 1992, which had virtually no major significant storms except for Hurricane Andrew. And then the question then is, so far, of course, it's very early in the season. I hope I'm not going to be wrong, at least about it being a quiet hurricane season. I hope I'm wrong about the Andrew event repeated. If I do have a sense that if it comes, it's going to perhaps be another potential trigger of an oil industry upheaval that triggers a return to an economic crisis in the latter half of 2010. And that would mean that the track of such a storm, I sense, is going to move towards, fortunately miss the oil slick, but move towards the coastline between eastern Texas and Louisiana. And that's where most of our rigs and ports for oil are. And I hope that's not what happens, but that it has to be stated. And I still hold that we're not going to have as violent a hurricane season otherwise, except for one superstorm. And we'll just have to see.
Yeah, and one is really enough, isn't it, John?
Well, yes, if it's an Andrew. It's anybody who was in Homestead, and then it almost, when it came across from Homestead, it almost hit New Orleans. That was a scare for New Orleans. The other thing that comes in this kind of a season is perhaps more potential threats to the Hawaiian Islands. Iniki also hit Kauai around the same time as Andrew. So the other thing that is just going to come more and more is extreme weather. I mean, look at these flash floods that have just hit the area that Nostradamus grew up in, Provence, just now. Huge floods down the Rhone River. And through Freyus and
sure.
Other...
Look at Arkansas, John. 20 people
Arkansas was hit. Last week, Oklahoma now has had the second flood of the century in as many weeks or months.
Tennessee's had it.
Tennessee was a Katrina that the news agency didn't even look into. And it's all over the world, this relentless extreme weather. It's Mother Nature. It's got a fever. When you have a fever, sometimes you have cold chills like blizzards when you're Mother Nature. It is caused by a general warming of the climate. And the key, which I talk about in detail in predictions for 2010, is going to be discovered. It's the permafrost melting in the northern climates in the Arctic is actually venting far more methane than people are aware of, and this is significantly rising the heat. The other thing I'm sensing is that the summer is going to be very hot and dry in the Gulf, as well as far north as Chicago. Somewhat similar to what happened back in 1979 when the last major oil rig disaster in the Gulf of Mexico took place off the coast of Mexico, where there was a huge geyser of oil coming out for months until it was finally capped. It was in shallow waters. That period also saw some of the first really significant heat waves to Chicago and other places. The other thing that unfortunately has happened in the book is that I said that you would have extreme heat waves in South Asia, some of the worst ever recorded. There have been such happening in South Asia, in India, just last month. So, you know, I'm sorry it's all such dire stuff.
Well, but mostly that's what prophecy is, isn't it?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the positive potentials in the future are often undermined by the very thing that makes, in my experience of prophecy, what makes it tick, makes it run. And that is a society that brings in new souls through birth and then trains them to seed them with the programs, identities, and egoism to repeat the past and call it the future. I mean, you ever wonder why history repeats itself? It's because our educational system, from the first day of birth till about we're 21 years old, is often, though well-meant, it's a huge limiting and dividing and divisive process that turns people into functional, frightened, self-divided mediocrities when they were born, as some mystics say, with the Christ spark in them. And born, as Osho used to say, was an Indian mystic, he said, stupidity is, you're not born with stupidity, it's borrowed.
Well, that is so true. That is so true. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed on this situation, John. You know, most prophets, especially people like Nostradamus, always prophesies in apocalyptic times about colored rain falling out of the sky. You know, that's what we're starting to get now.
Yes, it's now there's a couple phenomenon with this, and I actually have some blogs in my stock of blogs, which has been so busy with everything that's been going on in current events that I still haven't been able to publish them. But there's a whole series I'm going to do about Nostradamus and other prophets talking about red rains, rains of blood, and black rains, and fish falling out of the sky, and animals and things like that. And it's one of the kind of quirkier, somewhat entertaining sides of prophecy, and it's related in some real meteorological phenomena that sometimes sees, for instance, just recently, I think in 2009, there was a very powerful storm in the northern territories of Australia that sucked up a bunch of fish, carp in a river, and deposited them 150 miles.
Yeah.
Farther down.
Drop them down on someone.
Yeah, and so, you know, since portents from the sky, ichthyomancy from the sky is the reading of fish falling out of the sky and stuff like that. I look at some of the funnier divination techniques. But one of the more common ideas is the red rain, which can often happen when, in the case of the Sirocco that comes across North Africa, it can carry the red oxidized dust of Africa and mix with rain and then fall in southern France where Nostradamus lived, and they would see what they thought was blood rain. But really it was just dust, red dust in the rain. Then, of course, there are other famous prophecies like the Antichrist prophecies of Nostradamus that has a description of a reddened, icy hail that's kind of a play on the word grêle, which in Old French can mean hail or stones or ashen rain, and it covers the earth as a sign of the Antichrist coming, the third Antichrist in his prophecies.
I've got to ask you this. Yesterday, President Obama has named the Navy Secretary, you can pronounce his name Mabus or Mabus, depending on how you look at it, to head up this commission to look into the spill here of the oil rig.
Yes.
Isn't that the same name that Nostradamus said was the code for the Antichrist?
Yes, poor Ray Mabus.
Poor.
Yeah, he has the dubious coincidence of having a name that M-A-B-U-S spelled exactly like
the same thing, right?
Famous Mabus prophecy name, which goes like this. Mabus very soon then will die. Then will come a horrible undoing of people and animals. At once one will see vengeance, 100 powers, thirst, famine, when the comet will pass. Now, that's the English approximation of the old French. Now, I've been following Ray Mabus's process in and out of the Nostradamus prophecies since I wrote Nostradamus, The Complete Prophecies, back in the mid-90s. And when he was, as former governor of Mississippi,
right,
was elected to go to Saudi Arabia as the U.S. ambassador. Now, you know, it makes a lot of logical sense that Mabus is considered to be the third and final Antichrist related to some scene or theater event, or is martyred somehow in the Middle East and triggers a 27-year war. You think, well, here's a man who, God forbid, goes there, and maybe, God forbid, Nostradamus is talking about him. Something happens with the ambassador getting killed, and that triggers World War III. I got a lot of letters about that, but I said, now, hold on, everybody. You know, sometimes the most obvious conclusion is not the actual meaning of the prophet. So, but with that said, and as the threat passed, he had an uneventful time as ambassador. Nothing happened to him. He disappeared from public office to resurface again in 2007 as a supporter of Barack Obama and overseeing Obama's Mississippi campaign.
Let's take this break, John, and we'll come right back to it because this is fascinating. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.